I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective. Hey everybody, James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, Mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, by damn, what in the world is wrong with you? Because it is the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio, Mojo50.com. Well, you know what? Enough of all these people in the news. I want to talk about me for a minute. Today, this morning, I woke up from a somewhat restful sleep in a king-size 12-inch thick memory foam mattress. I had a fan blowing on me to keep me cool at night. I got up. I went upstairs. Took my morning constitutional in a toilet that flushed when I was finished with it. And I reached for the clean towel that I had there on the rack after I washed my hands. I had a good breakfast. I had a great breakfast, actually. I'm going to have a great dinner here later. Thanks to all the stuff that's all the food that's in my refrigerator that's hooked up to electricity and is running. And then I spent some more time this morning going about my home, which hadn't been swept away in floodwaters, hadn't been damaged by trees or high winds. I sat comfortably in a recliner while I watched some television news to see what was going on. And then, after I put away some laundry from a washer and dryer that are operable, I came down here to sit in front of my desktop computer and grab my USB microphone, all my power, my internet, all my stuff working, and get to engage in this hobby, this passion of mine that I love so much. I'm doing this, and I'm doing this in a community, in a neighborhood that is likewise, you know, their day's going on about what they do every Sunday on a beautiful autumn day in October. But about 2.5 hours away from where I live, and none of that happening. Since last Thursday, last Friday, these people have been positively devastated. They've been wiped out. And that's not an exaggeration. Not dead air, just continuing to digest that as I have been all week. I don't know why. Maybe because I'm older now and I understand the simple things that equate with contentment. But, you know, those people in the Carolinas and Tennessee and Georgia, they had all those same things up to a week ago. They had all the same things that I have, hopefully that you have. They weren't any different from us. Or any different folks all over the country. But in the last week, those things have been stripped away from them. They say 200 missing. Or 200 dead at this point. That's going to be a larger number. I'm not exactly sure FEMA wasn't lowballing that. But the point is, all those people in the Carolinas, in Georgia, and Florida, and Tennessee, parts of Virginia, who suffered the brunt of Hurricane Helene, are now having to suffer at the hands of the Harris-Biden regime, at the hands of the Harris-Biden FEMA. Now, what we should be thinking about are the lives that have been, well, the lives that have been lost, for one, and the lives of these folks who are going to have to deal head on with the aftermath of this. See, you and I are blessed. In my area, there was a lot of rain, and I mean a lot of rain, like maybe 8 inches, maybe 10 inches in about a 36-hour period, 48-hour period, and that's a lot. And we hadn't had a whole lot of rain up here this summer in the Mountain State, so the ground was dry, and it was kind of hard packed. So that means the ground isn't able to absorb the water, which means runoff, which means flooding. And then we had a little bit of flooding, and the high winds brought down some trees, and here at the house, I lost internet for maybe about 8 or 10 hours. That was the extent of my damage. That was the extent of a lot of people's damage around here. But these people are never going to be the same. And FEMA... And you know what? There were people, I can remember Hurricane Katrina, and people, you know, the Democrats were extremely critical of what had happened with FEMA and how badly things went there in the beginning. And you're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. You remember that? Kevin Brown, I think, was the guy who was director of FEMA at that time. And that was what George Bush said to him. And maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Maybe that FEMA just does not need to be, man. Or at least not in the incarnation that we've seen it, maybe even since its inception. It's really a raw deal. And the things that we're hearing on the ground in these areas, in Georgia, in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, the response has been so poor. And bear in mind, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. We need to think about the potential, and I'm sure, pretty much guaranteed, in my opinion, to my way of thinking, disenfranchisement of these folks in that area, in these states that have been so heavily hit by Helene. But under the Harris-Biden regime, under the direction of Alejandro Mayorkas, FEMA, which was designed to aid, and this is important, aid citizens in emergency situations, like hurricanes, has as its priority instead aiding millions of illegal aliens. 3 months ago, right out 3 months ago, Alejandro Mayorkas assured us that FEMA was well-funded to see us through the hurricane season. This week, he tells us they're broke. And they're broke because over the last 2 years, they stripped out of their funds almost $2 billion for illegal alien aid and left Florida, the Carolinas, and Georgia without the disaster relief that taxpayers funded for it. The things that you're seeing on TikTok and whatever Twitter is these days, X, okay, are shocking. Not only is the government not making relief crews and funds available, they've been blocking relief by individuals and religious groups. They've been confiscating private donations, blocking private helicopters. All of these things that citizens are attempting to do to rescue or get supplies, including food and medicine, to the survivors of these heavily impacted areas. They've interfered with the distribution of Skylinks, donated by Elon Musk and other private donors to communities stranded by floodwaters and washed out roads. Individuals were bringing in supplies on foot by mule train and helicopters. Samaritan's Purse has been managing to get in supplies. Ranchers have offered feed and pastures and stable space. Dolly Parton donated $1 million immediately, and Dollywood, the park itself, another $1 million. In a pinch, you know who can, who can't, and who never would. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis sent relief crews to Appalachia, and they worked efficiently and tirelessly to help restore roads and services. Electricity is going to be hard to provide in these areas for months. Among other reasons, there are insufficient supplies of needed replacement transformers because the Biden administration shipped those to help maintain the infrastructure in Ukraine. So bad has been the arrogance and the interference of FEMA that reportedly, and I haven't been able to find out anything other than secondhand information, maybe true, maybe not, but one director in North Carolina who was denying aid was beaten and roughed up by locals who were frustrated with his conduct. In some other communities, local sheriffs have threatened to arrest FEMA workers if they hindered rescue and aid work. Biden and Harris magnanimously offered the victims who have lost so much, who have lost everything, $750 per household. And they did this at the same time they're awarding $157 million to displaced Lebanese from where the Israeli Defense Forces are reestablishing order and eliminating terrorism for the benefit of the entire world and not simply their nation. And now it seems that whistleblowers within the agency are starting to come forward, and they're saying things like, the agency's misappropriated funds in the wake of Helene, that they withheld pre-disaster aid, and first responders and service members have been waiting in hotels nearby without deployment orders. Now, here's the difference in this disaster relief that we're talking about for these folks down south, and other relief programs that are designed for illegal aliens. FEMA disaster relief funding. Initial cash assistance is $750 per household, not per person. You've got to apply online and be approved. Further cash assistance for food necessities only goes to families receiving similar SNAP benefits that they were getting prior to the disaster. You got to provide ID to verify who you are and that you were receiving benefits from other programs before you are approved for FEMA money, or are you ready? Or you can apply through the CPB1 app. Okay. All you have to do is make an undocumented claim of asylum and set up an appointment at a port of entry, and that includes airports, because they are ports of entry. The illegal alien is then directed to use certain flights from certain foreign airports, and that brings them to the point of entry where the appointment itself is. You'll go through a brief asylum application process, and then you are released into the country with a hearing date years from now. Then you're going to be directed to any one of numerous NGOs run by left-wing organizations that are funded with taxpayer dollars. That's our nickel. And now we find out that FEMA funds were used to for migration assistance programs. What is that? That's free rent. That's cash assistance on debit cards. No ID required other than a CPB asylum claim. That's it. The paperwork to do that. We're going to find massive amounts of fraud and graft, kickbacks to state and local politicians like the New York mayor from the hundreds of millions of dollars sent by federal government, our money, again, our nickel, to these NGOs. 99% of it's going to Democrats. And that's the only reason for why elected officials in big cities like Chicago or Philly or New York would be screwing over their constituents to spend tens of millions of dollars on illegal aliens while cutting city services. And here's the thing. I don't want to bring it up, but I'm going to go ahead and bring it up anyway. Yeah, I kind of want to bring it up. These areas that have been so devastated by this, by Hurricane Helene, have traditionally been, and still are, I think, overwhelmingly, conservative areas, conservative regions. Folks in these areas hold to conservative values. How do we get them to vote? What do we do? How can we help them? And I know what you're thinking, and you know what? I would agree with you. But we live in an age where the left, the progressive Marxist left, and that's who we're talking about, you know, the mask is off. It has been for a few years now. And they're, I think, kind of drunk with the victory that they got by getting Joe Biden in the White House. Okay, with the fix. I can see them deliberately slow walking aid and trying to get these people squared away, you know, as an excuse for why they can't vote. Well, we don't have electricity down there. We don't have polling places. We don't have. I mean, what's going to happen with these folks? What provisions have been made? How would we even do it? Now, I know how we can help them materially. And we see it happening. Like I said, people are taking four-wheelers. They're taking off-road vehicles. They're taking helicopters. They're taking airplanes. They're using pack mules, for God's sake. That's the citizens. That's not FEMA. That's us, guys. That's you and I seeing our neighbors in trouble, and we're donating, we're working, we're giving time, we're giving food, we're giving water, we're giving all the things that they need to survive. We're giving them the aid they so critically need. And don't take my word for what FEMA's going on. Check it out. There are people out there, and you know, that's one of the great things about the internet and technology as it exists today, in our coat pocket, in our pants pocket. We have a TV news station. We do. Every one of us can be Walter Cronkite. Every one of us can be Chet Huntley or David Brinkley. Any one of us. And there are a lot of people out there that are doing it. There are a lot of town criers. And they're telling us what's going on because we can't trust the people in whom we used to trust this responsibility to. It has become incumbent upon ourselves now. And, you know, I have said for a long time, if we get out of this mess that this country's in, it's going to be because of us. There is no cavalry. We are the cavalry. Okay? We are the Green Hornet and Cato busting through the door and whooping the crooks and bringing people to justice that need to be brought to justice. Us. Just like it's us It's just like it's we the people who have started these convoys in the air and over land to get these people in Georgia and the Carolinas and Tennessee and these seriously affected areas the aid and subsistence they need. Is it intentional on FEMA's part? I don't know. Is it incompetence? Again, I don't know. In either case, it is still all the same unacceptable. Okay? Whether it's through malice and intent or incompetency and fecklessness. I have my own thoughts on that, and I know you do too. And all we have to do is just look at the evidence. And not only that, look at what's, you know, look at the evidence of the last 4 years. Was it incompetence and fecklessness during Katrina, or was it malice and intent? I don't know. But either way, whether it was incompetence, whether it's intent, it's unacceptable. And no heads are going to roll over this. Nobody's going to resign. Nobody's going to get fired. These FEMA managers, other than risking the wrath of a righteously indignant public, as well they should, I don't know. Nothing's going to happen to these guys. And that's what makes me... That's what makes me angrier than anything else, is that if this is malice, if this is malicious, and that could be proved, and of course, you know, it never will be, beyond a conviction in the court of public opinion, nothing's going to happen to these guys when they should probably, in all likelihood, either be tarred and feathered or put in the stocks. And those things won't happen either. And meanwhile, every day, every minute, every second since this storm has blown out of that area, these people have been suffering. And I mean suffering. No vehicles, they're gone, they washed away. No houses, they're gone, they washed away. No stores. Nothing but mud and debris is left. And I sit here today, comfortably ensconced in my office chair, in front of my laptop, in front of my home that's lit, that's heated, that has water, no damage, intact. And there before the grace of God go I. There are a lot of charitable organizations. Don't give your money to the Red Cross. You may as well just go ahead and throw it out into the street. Don't waste your time with the Red Cross. Go with your churches. Go with your civic groups. There are people that have donation. You know, they have locations where you can bring in cleaning supplies. Get some of those clothes. Launder them up. Fold them up that you're not wearing anymore, that you were going to give to Goodwill or that you were just going to throw away. Bag them up. There's going to be people that will take them. And these guys don't have anything. They don't have anything. Because all the stuff they had in their houses got washed away with the houses. I'm not doing a telethon or anything for these people, but it's moved me. And in the last couple of days when, you know, I started reading and finding out about FEMA's bungling of this whole thing, it's really made me angry, and it's bothered me a lot. I guess where I'm old now and I understand a little bit better and a little more clearly just how precious life is, just how precious our way of life is. The things that we take for granted that we're so blessed with, everything I got today in this house, there are people down there, they have nothing. They have no house. They have no things. They have no clothes. They have no food. They have us. That's the only thing they got going in their corner. They have us. And it is incumbent upon we, the people, when we see our neighbors hurting, struggling, suffering, dying in many cases, we got to do something. We absolutely have to do something. I have a Donald Trump recording that I like to play periodically, and I've played it for a number of years. And it resonated with me from the very first time I heard it to this day, and it still does. And I'd like to share it with you now. It's called "The Best Is Yet to Come." And I just want you to take a minute and listen to it and think about all these things that have happened and what our responsibility is to our neighbors and how important it is that we take that seriously.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world. And we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising, God's grace is still shining, and my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
I don't know who wrote the thing. I really don't care. It was delivered perfectly by Donald Trump. It captured the imagery in that soliloquy, that monologue, was very, very easy for me to see. It came into my mind very clearly and very cleanly. And again, from the very first time I heard this thing, it resonated with me extremely positively, and it still does. There's been so little of that. Most of the people in government hate this country. Most, you know, the progressive Marxist left, they hate it. Joe Biden hates his country. He hates us. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Kamala Harris, Alejandro Mayorkas, they all hate us. They hate our guts, man. And it really, I try to be objective about FEMA and its incompetence, but you know what? There's an intent here, okay? I think that there is malice here. And I'm not seeing anything that's really convincing me beyond that. This almost seems, as I think about it, it almost seems, how can I say this? Well, this is not good for a guy that likes to talk on radio. If it is intent, it's designed to create either, oh man, greater damage. It's almost like, okay, here's what we can do. We'll take the baked in incompetence of FEMA, and we will add our own maliciousness to it. We'll add our own malice to this, our own specific intent to prolong and maybe even increase these people's suffering. And it should make you mad, America. No, I'm not saying that's the case, okay? What I'm saying is that's my way of thinking on this. That's where my thinking is. And again, incompetence, malice, either one of them is unacceptable. It is. It's unacceptable. But here we have it. And it seems it's compounded. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Okay. They're taking this malice and compounding it with the baked-in incompetence of FEMA. And what we see is the result. Prolonged suffering. Confiscating supplies. Are you kidding me? I've never been one ever to advocate violence. But I can totally understand why these people would have roughed that guy up. And I hope they didn't hurt him too bad. But you know, yeah, I can see it. And you probably can too. If they were denying your family these much needed supplies, if they were denying your children food for their bellies, where they have, they recently found a church, they found survivors inside a church deep in that devastated area that hadn't had food in 6 days. What the hell, man? They've got drones. They could, you know, they have an army of drones and an army of drone operators. They can find these people if they want to. If they can find the terrorists through infrared imagery hiding in the desert or in, they can find these people. Why don't they want to find them? Why aren't these techniques, these protocols, these procedures being implemented? Well, in part because they spent all their money on illegal aliens and they probably can't fund those operations as it is right now. But you know what? What does that say? We have a hurricane season every damn year, and there's usually one pretty bad one at some point. and things like this happen. And people that are in the path of this destruction need our help. They need us. Oh my God. I got it. Yeah. Again, look at your charitable organizations in your areas. Bleach, plastic tarps, shoes, socks, underwear, girly things, toothpaste, shovels, rakes. They need all this stuff. They need all these things. Food, water. Thanks to Elon Musk and Starlink, they're establishing a communications network, which should hopefully better facilitate getting these supplies to the places where they need to be, or figuring out the logistics of how to get them where they need to be. You can't count on FEMA. You can't count on the Red Cross. They have to count on us. We have to count on us. We are the cavalry. Taking a brief musical interlude. We'll be back after this.
The hawk of a man with a beer in his hand. He looked like a drunk old fool. And I knew if I hit him right, well, I could knock him off of that stool. But everybody, they said, watch out. Hey, that's Tiger Man McCool. He's had a whole lot of fights, and he's always come out winner. Yeah, he's a winner. But I had myself about five too many, and I walked up tall and proud. I faced his back, and I faced the fact that he had never stooped or bowed. I said, Tiger Man, you're a pussycat. And a hush fell on the crowd. I said, let's you and me go outside and see who's a winner. Well, he gripped the bar with one big hairy hand and he braced against the wall. He slowly looked up from his beer and my God, that man was tall. He said, boy, I see you're a scrapper, so just before you fall, I'm gonna tell you just a little about what it means to be a winner. He said, now you see these bright white smiling teeth, you know they ain't my own. Mine rolled away like chiclets down the street in San Antonio. But I left that person cursing, nursing seven broken bones. And he only broke three of mine. That makes me the winner. He said, now behind this grin, I got a steel pin that holds my jaw in place. A trophy of my most successful motorcycle race. And each morning when I wake and touch this scar across my face, it reminds me of all I got by being a winner. Now this broken back was a dying act of a handsome Harry Clay. That sticky Cincinnati night I stole his wife away. But that woman, she gets uglier and she gets meaner every day. But I got her, boy, and that's what makes me a winner. He said, you gotta speak loud when you challenge me, son, 'cause it's hard for me to hear. With this twisted neck and these migraine pains and this big old cauliflower ear. And if it wasn't for this glass eye of mine, why, I'd shed a happy tear. To think of all that you're gonna get by being a winner. I got arthritic elbows, boy. I got dislocated knees from picking fights with thunderstorms and charging in the trees. And my nose been broke so often, I might lose it if I sneeze. And son, you say you still wanna be a winner. Now you remind me a lot of my younger days with your knuckles a-quenching white. But boy, I'm gonna sit right here and sip this beer all night. And if there's something that you gotta gain or prove by winning some silly fight, well, okay, I quit. I lose, you're the winner. So I stumbled from that barroom, not so tall and not so proud. And behind me I still hear the hoots of laughter of the crowd. But my eyes still see and my nose still works and my teeth are still in my mouth. And you know, I guess that makes me the winner!
Lee, thank you very much, really. And thank you, a very big thank you to Pennsylvania. We love Pennsylvania. And as I was saying, oh, I love that. I love that chart. I love that graph. Isn't it a beautiful thing? But also beautiful because look at the number. That's the day I left office. It was the lowest Border Patrol, the lowest it's ever been. Illegal immigration. Today it's out of control. But I love it for other reasons, too. You know that. So thank you very much. And thank Lee and what Lee has done with that song. And it's such an honor to have it. I want to just let you know that tonight I return to Butler in the aftermath of tragedy and heartache to deliver a simple message to the people of Pennsylvania and to the people of America. Our movement to make America great again stands stronger, prouder, more united, more determined, and nearer to victory than ever before. We're going to make America great again.
And we are back. Welcome. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be. You really should, because it's the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Mojo50.com. Well, there you have President Trump returning somewhat triumphantly to Butler, Pennsylvania, to pick up where he left off. And you can say what you want about the guy, love him or hate him. I think that was a really class move how he did that, as I was saying. Okay? Because he's not going to be dissuaded. He's not going to be discouraged. He's not going to be stopped. He's not going to be intimidated. None of us are. And it was a great rally. The people there were going crazy for the guy. And it's like that everywhere. And it's a phenomenon when it comes to politicians that I've never seen. Barack Obama couldn't touch this. Bill Clinton couldn't touch this. As popular as they were, and in many circles, they were, you know, they were the zenith. They were the zenith of popularity. But not like this. They talk about holding a Trump rally, and you would think that the Stones were coming to town. People tailgate. They're there the night before, maybe a couple of nights before, ready to go in. They're camping out, man. And they're hanging with each other, and they're fellowshipping together. And it's unbelievable. I've never been able to go to one. I've often wanted to. And I think I've probably been remiss in my responsibilities to you guys for not going and then coming back and telling you about it. But it's got to be an awesome time. And there is a momentum there, and to think of how difficult it can be at times to maintain that momentum. Look how long this has gone. 8 years. 8 years these rallies have gone on, you know, and people can't get enough of it. It's like Elvis. They can't get enough of it. And it was an outstanding rally. If you didn't watch it yesterday, and you don't have anything to do, of course, it's a beautiful Sunday. You should probably get out and enjoy it. As soon as I get done with this, I'm probably going to grab the lawnmower and make like another Pleasant Valley Sunday here. Cut the grass, maybe throw something on the smoker, something like that. Anyway, back to this. You should check it out. And if you never have, and if you have, you know what you're going to see, okay? But if you haven't, do yourself a favor. And it makes it, I think, easier to understand. I guess I could say love, but the admiration and the respect and the support that Americans give this guy. Joe Biden's never seen this. Kamala Harris won't ever see it in her wildest dreams. Hillary Clinton's never seen it. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama lay awake at night in a cold sweat, fantasizing about the kind of crowds that Donald Trump draws. It's an experience, obviously. Like I said, they'll be there a day or two ahead of time. They'll be hanging out with each other. They'll be tailgating, you know, like and I think it's great. I think it's awesome. I think it shows something about the enduring goodness and, it's kind of cynical, wholesomeness of the American people. There is a swath, a very, very, very large swath of America that longs for these things that Donald Trump talks about. They don't long for the day when boys can go into their high school restrooms and avail themselves of the tampon dispenser that ultimately will be placed there. Yeah. Going from the sublime to the ridiculous, get a hold of this.
If you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska, a town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17, worked on family farms, and then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years. And in Congress, I was one of the most bipartisan people, working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people, to make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot, I will get caught up in the rhetoric, but being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this. I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be praising Xi Jinping about COVID, and I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community. And then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protest went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Thank you, Governor.
That, of course, Governor Tim Walz, from the debate earlier this week against J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance poised in control and fundamentally schooled everybody there. And again, it was like Donald Trump when he debated Kamala Harris, when he debated Joe Biden. Same thing, 2-3 against one, and they know that going in there. J.D. Vance knew exactly what was going to be happening in there. And, you know, it's weird, and he came out on top. Tim Walz looked like they've been making a lot of comparisons between him. They've photoshopped his face onto Sergeant Schultz, the actor John Banner played Sergeant Schultz in the TV show Hogan's Heroes. You got to be a certain age to get that, but that was, and they're great. But you know, and the thing of it was, I was expecting something, and I don't know why. Perhaps. No, I don't know why. Something a little more contentious between these two guys. But it wasn't. It was remarkably civil on both sides. And J.D. Vance just wore him out. There wasn't any question that he came out on top in the debate. And that leads us to Tim Walz. There's a lot of problems with Tim Walz. A lot of problems. And it has to do a lot with his ties to China. And his ties to China, I think, probably are as tight or as firmly binding as Joe Biden's ties to China were, or probably still are in some respects. I don't know how he could take a very active role in assisting him now than he had in the past, but who knows. Tim Walz has been to China 30 times just months after the Tiananmen Square protests, in which Communist Chinese government slaughtered hundreds, maybe even thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators there in the spring of 1989. Tim Walz, through Harvard University's World Teach Initiative, worked for a year in a teacher exchange program where he taught American history in English to teenage students in China. The program was paid for by the Communist Chinese government and was made possible by a friend of Walz in China's Foreign Affairs Department. And over the course of his adult years, Walz has said many times that he was in Hong Kong during, not after, the Tiananmen Square massacre. But on October 1st, 2024, Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets started to report that Walz had not, in fact, traveled to China until August of 1989. The following New York Times report on October 2nd suggests that maybe Walz's motive for lying about this matter was to have portrayed himself as someone who, from a young age, had never been afraid to place himself in the midst of perilous environments. After his year in the teacher exchange program, which was 1989 to 1990, Walz returned to the United States and took a job as a social studies teacher at an Alliance, Nebraska high school. He told the Nebraska National Guard's newspaper, "Going there, to China, was one of the best things I've ever done." Asserting that Chinese officials had treated him like a king and showered him with more gifts than I could bring home. Walls would later reflect, "No matter how long I live, I will never be treated that well again." During his tenure as a teacher in Nebraska, Walls told his students in a 1991 lesson about China's communist system. Here's what he said. "It means that everyone is the same and everyone shares. The doctor and the construction worker make the same. The Chinese government and the place they work for provide housing and 14 kilograms, or about 30 pounds of rice per month. They get food and housing." In Nebraska as well, Walls met and fell in love with a fellow instructor named Gwen Whipple. The couple eventually married in 1994 and spent their honeymoon in China. Their wedding day was the fifth anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, date that, by Gwen's telling, was chosen by Tim Walls because he wanted to have a date he'll always remember. The Walses established a small business called Educational Travel Adventures Incorporated, which devoted its efforts chiefly to organizing educational trips to China for American high school students. These trips were subsidized by the Chinese government, according to a newspaper article there at the time. Walls had the idea while working in the communist country, and a friend helped contact the authorities, and funding came through from the government. The Chinese communist government is the government he's referring to. Students on Walls trips enjoyed a special status that let them go places other people could not. Students would then be taken to a university where they were taught about the Chinese government. Walls, however, urged students to, quote, downplay their Americanness. Now, here's where I'm going with this. In 2005, Tim Walls retired from the Army National Guard after 24 years of service, having achieved the rank of Master Sergeant, or E8. But at that time, and for many years after that, Walls' official website biography identified him as having attained the higher rank of Command Sergeant Major, or E9. However, Walls only held that prestigious title for a little while because it was rescinded due to his failure to complete all the requirements upon which that rank is contingent. He retired in 2005. Now, stay with me here. He retired in 2005 after 24 years of service, which means that he enlisted in the National Guard in 1981. That means that he was a member of the Minnesota National Guard during all those trips to China. Yeah. Well, we're an hour, and looks like we're going into extra innings on this. So I'm just hang around. I'm just going to keep talking about it. Look, and that's a great thing about this new format. I'm not limited to just an hour. We've already talked about this a couple of different times, but now that I'm getting into the swing of things, I really dig this new format that I'm doing for Mojo, because I don't have to have any commercials, I don't have to stop, I don't have to do anything, or I can do whatever I want. So he, from 1981 to 2005, Tim Walls is an active member of the Minnesota National Guard, and during this time frame, coincidentally, he's probably made the bulk of his 30 trips to China. 30 trips to China. His wedding anniversary is the date of the Tiananmen Square massacre. 30 trips to China. In my mind, to my thinking, and such as that is on a on a Sunday morning. But actually, early Sunday afternoon, but whatever. This guy is a communist sympathizer. He's a fanboy. He's one of their guys. Now, when it comes to this, in my mind, there's no question about it, okay? He is one of China's guys, bought and paid for. No different. You know, he's talking about all these gifts, I treat him like a king, I do this, I do that. Okay, no different than Joe Biden, except maybe in the amount of money. And there's only one person who's made more money off the Chinese, conceivably, than Joe Biden and his family, and that's Mitch McConnell. Elizabeth Chao. Anyway. And then we have the stolen valor thing, and we've all gone through that, and everybody knows what the deal is. He was given the provisional rank of sergeant major, command sergeant major, with the proviso that he complete the online training and the classes that were, you know, prerequisites to having this, to attain that rank of E9. He didn't do it. He got a heads up, he got a warning that his outfit was going to be deploying overseas, and he decided he didn't want to do that. That he was going to run for Congress, I think, instead. He ran for Congress, and he split. He retired. Everybody else knew they were going, and then he went back and talked about going to war and being in combat, and he's just embellished himself. And, you know, it's not uncommon for politicians to do this. Joe Biden, you know, was full scholarship for his law degree, and he graduated at the number one in his class, and, you know, all that crap, and it was all lies. It was all lies. And Tim Walz is no different. Tim Walz is absolutely no different. 30 trips to China. So here's the question, and I've asked it before, and I'm just curious. When the whole stolen valor thing came out, you know, after he was already selected to be Kamala Harris's running mate, there were a lot of people wanting to take the high road, and what they did is they kind of split the difference. You know, we're not going to, you know, we're going to thank him and honor him for his military service up to the point that he lied about being a command sergeant major. We're going to condemn that. But the rest of it, we're going to give him a pass on because whatever. 30 trips to China. Now, obviously, these trips took place while he was still in the Minnesota National Guard. I don't know what that means, but I just thought I'd point it out. So my question is this. Given what we know about Tim Walz, and we really don't hear a whole lot about it now. I think people have moved on from it. But does his service prior to lying to stolen valor, to the stolen valor issue and lying about being a command sergeant major, if in light of the fact that it's obvious, okay, 30 trips to China, this dude's a communist sympathizer, he's one of their guys, he might even be a communist stooge. Do we still honor his military service? How do we justify honoring the military service of a guy who is a communist sympathizer? Well, we don't. We can't. Why? 30 trips to China. And plus, he's a dumbass. Listen to this.
I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400. Town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service.
Rode bikes with your buddies till the streetlights came on, and he's proud of that service. What the hell? How many guys remember your the oath that you pledged when you enlisted in the bike riding till the streetlights came on buddies corps. Does anybody remember that? I faithfully promised to ride my bike with my buddies till the streetlights come on and then go home and have dinner, because that's what the riding bikes till the streetlight comes on with your buddies corps does. I get crazy. And here's the thing. There's absolutely no shortage of reasons that this guy doesn't need to be anywhere near the reins of power from the position of sidewalk manager on up. He thought it was a good idea to put tampon dispensers in boys' restrooms in Minnesota high schools. On that one alone, on the basis of that thinking alone, he shouldn't be anywhere near anything. he should be out in a field somewhere, just hanging around, you know. Maybe run a pumpkin stand. I don't know. But yet, he's supposed to be taken seriously. We're supposed to look at this guy, and the media is trying to make us look at this guy as a responsible candidate for the office of the vice presidency. And I suppose in the Marxist eyes, he is. He's probably a shoo-in. That being said, however, there are some interesting things happening on this. We're going to get a little weedy here, but you know, that's how I am. Politico. And this is according to our pal Sundance over at Conservative Treehouse. Politico is framing the, and I'm using my air fingers quotes here, the lack of vetting as the reason Kamala Harris is now stuck with Tim Walz as a liability, dragging down her campaign. Now, Walz is essentially, and we've seen this because it's just difficult to hide this kind of stuff in this day and age, you know, as a lying liar who lies, although they don't call him a lying liar who lies. Instead, they say he has misspoken frequently. But here's the thing. Politico never outlines the fact in this article that I'm going to share with you a little bit of, that Tim Walz was specifically vetted by Eric Holder. If the political left, then you'll listen to this article and you'll see what I mean. If the political left is going to run with this excuse of failed vetting when it comes to Walz to explain Harris losing, what they're saying essentially is that Eric Holder sunk the Kamala Harris campaign. So here's a little bit in the article. He's had a growing, they touch upon the point that he's had a growing number of inaccurate statements and at times embellishments about his past. They range from his military service, we talked about that, to the Hong Kong visit that he claimed he, you know, where he was in Hong Kong during the time of the Tiananmen Square massacre. And what they don't know in politics, and I think it's going to, not as much as we would probably hope, but it is going to undercut his credibility. Maybe not with the true blue, but with the independent voters, the fence straddlers, they may look at this and weigh things differently. And it could be, while we're on that subject, that J.D. Vance's victory, and it was a victory for sure, in the debate with Tim Walz, will probably, it could be that it influences more middle of the road or undecided voters than what Donald Trump did with Kamala Harris. But something's weird in this whole thing where they're trying to get out in front of Tim Walz's problems. Because pointing out the vulnerabilities of a strategically important selection, and that the vice president position is definitely that, is never ever allowed normally. So based on what we've seen already in the short time he's been out there, this guy is transparently sketchy. That's a given. But when we see an establishment, a place like Politico, highlighting, and that's what they're doing, they're highlighting the Democrat vice presidential nominee as a liar, is a really serious shift in their traditional approach. But there's been, and if it was just, if this was just a one-off, we could chalk it up to a rogue article that they placed out there to give the illusion of honest journalism. But that's not the case, because CNN has done a little hit, not a hit piece, but pointed out these things. This is unusual for the establishment in the tank progressive Marxist media that's out there. So could it be that they know what's going to happen? They got a really good idea that they're not going to be able to cheat enough to win this time, and they're looking for somebody to blame it on, which means they're going to blame the loss on the selection of Tim Walz as a candidate. They're going to say, well, this is the reason we lost, is because he was a bad candidate. And he is, and so is Kamala Harris, and so was Joe Biden. But here we are, and which means that this is going to fall back on Eric Holder, because he was in charge of the vetting process for running mates, and he was the guy that said, yeah, Walz is our boy. What happens? What happens now? That's going to be interesting. We won't be able to find out any of this until after the election, of course. But the dynamic itself is worthy of being noted, because, like Sundance says in this article, the Democrats are shoulder to shoulder in lockstep. They very rarely deviate from the narrative. And so this is kind of weird. And like they pointed out, I agree. I don't think it's just, you know, smoke and mirrors to give Politico the illusion of objective journalism, of honest journalism. I don't think it's that at all. I think that there are legitimate questions here that they're asking amongst themselves. And now, you know, it's been brought out in the public. We know the guy's no good. Okay, we know they're both no good. But if they're starting to highlight this, and they really don't have much of a choice, because they would be the only people who are ignoring the dishonesty, the inaccurate statements, the misspeaking, if they didn't publish something like this, they got to be worried. And they should be worried. I guess we'll find out soon enough. I think that's about all the time we got, guys. I got a yard that needs to be mowed, and some beautiful weather out there that I got to get out and enjoy while I'm mowing it. So with that, we will go ahead and give the benediction here. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to allow me to talk about these things. And again, on any of this stuff, don't take my word for it. Don't take my word for it. Look it up yourself. Do the research yourself. That's how we do it. I just wanted to bring these things to light because they struck me, and I think likewise they would kind of make you curious about things as well. A conservative's perspective is heard starting on Sundays on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. You aren't listening. You should be the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Doing some live stuff. We're still kind of sporadic with that. Thursday nights is usually the night, but it's just been kind of a weird season, and things have happened to where I haven't been able to do that too much, but hopefully it's starting to settle down, and we'll get back into that routine as well. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. We will be back next week taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. Now, you can find this thing in a lot of places. You can go to RSS.com, type in A Conservative Perspective, go to Amazon Music, go to Spotify, a lot of different platforms out there that are carrying it. And thank you. Thank you for the hour. Tell your friends, too. Try and spread the word, and let's get the show promoted as much as we can. Once again, thank you. We will be back next Sunday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.
Control shaming 24/7. Mojo 5-0.